Good morning. I call the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee meeting to order on Tuesday, February 21st. There is a quorum present. Representative Harder, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes of February 16th? And may I have a motion to approve?
Yes, Madam Chair, I have, and I move the minutes.
Thank you very much. Is there any discussion to the minutes? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of adoption of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, the motion prevails and the minutes of February 16, 2023 are approved. Okay, we have several bills up today. So I have the first two bills. So I'm going to hand the gavel over to Vice Chair Hewitt and move to the testifiers table. And we are going to have hard stops this morning. So for the first, we have the first two bills, and then we will have Chair Freiberg's bill and Representative Keeler's bill. And so I'm going to ask that we have a hard stop for my bills at, let's say, five till nine, so that we have time for the other bills as well. Okay.
Let's change places. His great grandfather. That served in the legislature. I haven't seen him for like 40 years.
Which side do you prefer?
What?
Okay. As long as I have a high chair, I don't have to hurt you. Raise the chair. It can't be short.
I don't have to gavel. Good morning, Chair Cleburne. You have a bill you're going to move for us, HF 1826.
That's correct. We have House File 1826, and I move that it be laid over for possible inclusion.
To your bill.
Thank you very much. House File 1826 is an interagency transfer report repeal. We propose to eliminate the reporting requirements of Minnesota Statute 15.0395, which requires a report from every executive branch agency each October on interagency agreements and interagency and intra-agency transfers with cumulative values over $100,000 from the previous fiscal year. The section was added in the 2017 State Government Omnibus Bill, and it has proven to be onerous for state agencies to compile with no discernible benefit to the state. Across the agencies, the reports to comply with this requirement for fiscal year 2019 totaled over 3,500 pages. In addition to being one time-consuming to compile, there has also been little evidence that the legislature has engaged with these reports. Moreover, we believe that there are better ways for the legislature to obtain this information, this data, and that are not administratively burdensome. What I would like to do now is just kind of open this up to member questions, because it really is a repealer bill, and if members have questions about why or what, we have the administration here to discuss that with the members.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if we could just get the name of your of the person from administration, that'd be great for the record.
Would you please identify yourself?
Certainly. My name is Britta Rayton, Deputy Commissioner at Minnesota Management and Budget.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee? Oh, but you had to do this to me, didn't you? Representative Kozniak.
Thank you, sir. That is the way committee works, that we ask questions. To the testifier or the author, Mr. Chair, the MMB had a previous policy priority to, and I'm trying to remember it exactly, but to transfer, you could only collect like $10 million from the other agencies for some of your functions. Does this bill, and if I didn't state that correctly, please clarify for the committee and the public, that provision that you're nodding, that I think you understand which provision I'm referring to. Does this bill and repealing of that provision affect that other policy priority of the department?
To the commission.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, it doesn't affect that priority. I think what you're referencing is we have a request to lift the cap on our ability to bill other agencies for our enterprise systems, our IT systems that support the core functions of the state enterprise. This doesn't change that. What this bill is about is a reporting requirement to the legislature, and it's really just a heavy administrative burden where each cabinet agency needs to provide to the legislature the documents of interagency agreements for payments between agencies. As Chair Claiborne mentioned, our actual last report totaled over 4,100 pages, and it's just a time-consuming effort for data that can easily be drawn from the accounting system. And the legislature, of course, has fiscal staff that has access to our SWIFT accounting system and can report out on interagency transfers, and certainly agencies are able to provide further detail on those transfers at request. But the kind of blanket reporting requirement of providing all 4,100 pages to the legislature, we think, is taking time that could be better spent doing other things.
Representative Kosnick, a follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I appreciate the explanation, so thank you for that. And I recognize the intent, you know, to kind of reduce some extra bureaucracy and such, but I think the transparency that we have is the reason why this was put in place in the first place. And with absent any other concrete way within this bill to the author, if there was a better way to, that you had mentioned, a better way to keep that transparency, I think I might support it. But I recognize that it may take a little extra time, but I think it's important for the public. It's not just legislators that look at this stuff, but other public people and agencies and organizations that are interested in keeping our government accountable. And so I'm not sure that I support this bill today, but if there are other ways to do it, be willing to hear that, but I don't think I can support it today.
Mr. Chair.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you. I just want to remind the committee that prior to the enactment of this reporting requirement, it is already a standard practice for agencies to provide copies of their interagency agreements to legislative staff upon request. The public can get this information if they want it. And it's interesting that in my testimony, I said in 2019, the report was over 3,500 pages. And the deputy commissioner stated the last report was 4,100 pages. So if we're growing this report by 800 pages every year, we are paying staff and time and energy away from the actual oversight of the work to compile a report. And to me, the transparency is there. And this is just enough. This is wasteful spending. And so I want to make sure that we are using our dollars as prudently as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And Representative Neto.
Thank you, Chair Hewitt. Thank you, Chair Claiborne. Can you tell me this was put into effect, I don't know when, not that long ago. What was it trying to achieve? What were we trying to identify? I mean, in my head, if we're moving money between, I mean, if the Commissioner of Transportation decides that he's going to move, you know, $50 million to IT, I think it would be important to know that. And I don't think that's the case here. So what were we trying to achieve by putting this in place in effect in the first place?
Since I wasn't in the, Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was in my script here, Madam Chair.
Okay, so we will have you chair this committee more often. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was not in the legislature in 2017, so I will ask the Deputy Commissioner to respond.
Deputy Commissioner.
And Representative, I have to admit I was not in my current role at the time, so I don't know specifically why it was put in place in 2017. What we've found since that time is that we haven't received very many questions when the report has been submitted, and we just know that it takes a tremendous amount of time of fiscal staff within agencies to compile it.
Follow-up, Representative Meadow?
No. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you for this. I just want to say thank you for this bill, actually, because I do think it's no surprise here that I am an agilist at heart. And anytime we can find a way to be more efficient, to save money, and to be to streamline process, which is what we often get criticized for in government, I think that's a good thing. So I appreciate that. I also did want to make one quick mention. I know there was some conversation about the MMB request to remove the cap. That relates to IT matters. I will tell you that there is actually the TAC, the Technical Advisory Council under the governor, which is actively looking at this particular issue. That is a bipartisan public-private partnership along with state agencies and legislators, which includes our own lead Nash and myself, who are having deeper dive discussions about how we adequately fund IT in a smart and targeted way and create sustainable funding in a way that makes sense, but that is also cognizant of those expenses and being careful about how we spend taxpayer dollars. So just wanted to make sure that we're clear that that is an entirely separate issue, but it is one that is being actively looked at by the legislature, including bipartisan coalition of folks. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Chair Cleborne, to last remarks.
I ask that you just please lay this over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
I bet you'll do that. All right. Thank you, Commissioner.
Our second bill?
We have a second bill here also by the chair. And what would you like to do with this bill, 1830, Chair Cleborne?
With 1830, I ask that we please lay it over. I move that we please lay it over House File 1830 for possible inclusion.
Chair Cleborne, to your bill.
Thank you very much. House File 1830 is the collateral modernization. With this bill, what we're trying to do, maybe this information would be helpful. Banks have an option. Banks have this option when serving local government, and it's under Minnesota Statute 118A.03. Today, bonds are the only choice banks have for collateral with the state. Options like a letter of credit are less expensive for banks and for the state to administer. Since the value does not fluctuate with the changing market conditions, there are no changes to the report and track each month like there are with bonds. Having more options available will increase the number of banks willing to compete for the state's business. And one of the banks with the state's business has suggested the change to reduce confusion in the banking industry over collateral. So with that, I have the deputy commissioner with me who could actually speak to this much better than I can. So and I would ask you to recognize Ms. Raton as my testifier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And deputy commissioner, please state your name.
Thank you. Again, Deputy Commissioner Britta Raton with Minnesota Management and Budget. Thank you, Chair Cleborne, for carrying this bill. This is really a modernization of statute to bring our collateral requirements for state funds within banks in line with what local governments currently have. As the chair mentioned, this was brought to MMB by one of our banking partners. It is more expensive for banks and more time-consuming for both banks and, frankly, MMB staff to use bonds as collateral because of the fluctuating value. So there is work that needs to happen as those values change. We believe kind of updating the requirement for what can be used as collateral for state funds by banks will make our banking contracts more competitive.
Thank you, Deputy. Do we have any member questions? Representative Kosnick. Oh, you have somebody else first?
If somebody else does.
Oh, Representative Doe, do you have a question?
I'll defer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have all kinds of questions on this one. I mean, not really. So can you tell me how many banks are of a size that are able to hold state collateral now? I mean, I know that they have to be significantly large. They have to have a lot of assets. And if we're passing a bill that just allows one particular bank to do it because they're only doing it now, how many banks are holding collateral at this point?
Madam Chair. Yep, we're going to give it to the commissioner.
Representative, I don't have an exact number for you. Unfortunately, our assistant commissioner for debt is out sick today, or she would have been here with me to have more detail on these sorts of questions. But I can certainly get that number for you and get back to you.
Representative Nodo, follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, and can you just ballpark? Is it significant? I mean, is it hundreds of banks? Is it five banks?
Commissioner?
I'm phoning a friend. I'm sorry. Our assistant commissioner for accounting is here, and it is certainly lower than 100, but it's more than one. So yep. It's probably in the tens of banks.
Representative Nadal.
And just one more. So this is kind of a two-part thing. Does the state use commercial paper? Is that part of what is utilized in this? That's my first part. And the second part is currently, do we use the Fed right now for safekeeping, or is that brand new with this bill?
Commissioner?
Again, Representative, I apologize that we don't have our assistant commissioner for debt here, but what I am happy to do is set up a conversation between the two of you to get deeper into the vehicles we're currently using.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author or the Deputy Commissioner, so it looks like we want to be able to use letters of credit that we're not able to right now. How does that affect the bonding process that we do at the state for traditional have to have a 60% majority? Is that part of this mix, or is this just the cash flow kind of thing?
Commissioner?
Representative, it does not affect that at all. This is just when banks are holding state funds, what do they use to collateralize those funds?
Okay, thank you.
Very good. Chair Cleveland. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair. I just have a question. So, because we talk a lot about fiscal notes, is there any fiscal note for this one or not?
Representative. Chair Cleburne?
Not to my knowledge.
Commissioner?
Representative, a fiscal note was completed the last time this bill was introduced, so not this session. It did not show a fiscal impact. What we did mention in that fiscal note is that there is some staff time at MMB to essentially reconcile when banks are collateralizing with bonds. We think there could be some slight staff time savings at MMB if they were able to use letters of credit because there wouldn't be fluctuation in value in the same way.
Representative Harder, follow up?
That's it, thank you.
Chair Cleburne, any closing comments?
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to make sure that the committee understands that this is being held over for possible inclusion. So if you do have further questions, or if we do need to do further research or modifications, that's always a possibility. And with that, I ask, Mr. Chair, that this bill be laid over for possible inclusion.
Representative Cleburne, Chair Cleburne, renews her motion to lay 1830 over for possible inclusion, which it will be.
Thank you very much.
I did that virtual thing, but I never did realize.
Representative Freiberg, I would like, if I can take just a moment of chair privilege before we begin. I want to thank everyone today for being here, and these next two bills are really important bills. And I want to begin with an acknowledgement for the work that we're doing here today in committee. The Minnesota Legislature is located on traditional, ancestral, and contemporary lands of the Dakota people. We acknowledge these places have a complex and layered history, and this land acknowledgement is one way we work to our larger community about the importance of this land and our relationship to each other. I, as chair of this committee, state acknowledgement and actions go hand in hand. Our work today is a commitment to the ongoing efforts to recognize, support, and honor all of our Minnesota tribal nations. And with that, Representative Freiberg, would you like to move your bill to be before the committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I would move that House File 274 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you. Representative Freiberg moves that House File 274 be referred to Ways and Means. And with that, if you would please, do you want to do your DE2 first?
Yeah, I think I would like to move the DE2 amendment, and I can provide a brief description of it if it's helpful.
Okay, if you'd please discuss the amendment.
Sure. So the amendment would make the commission's designs go into effect on statehood day next year, unless the legislature acts to change the plan. And it would make the legislators serving on the commission ex officio members. So I would move approval of the DE2 amendment to put the bill in the shape I would like it.
All right, thank you. And is there any conversation to the DE2, or may we get the bill in the author's desired form? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of the DE2, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Hearing none, the motion prevails and the bill is amended. To your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 274 has been in the works for several years, and both Representative Peter Fisher and I have worked on it. It would sunset the design of the state seal and flag with a commission charged with the task of coming up with new designs. As an initial matter, the bill would not mandate any specific design for the flag or the seal. We have a couple concepts here that have been floated. This one was sent to both Representative Fisher and I by a Minnesotan who's interested in the flag. Our lapel pins have another design, the Minnesota North Star flag, which is another idea that's been out there. But the bill before you would not require that either of these be ultimately chosen as the design that's used. So why redesign the seal and the flag? Well, there are two main issues with it. The first is an aesthetic one. The flag consists of the state seal slapped on a blue background. 20 states have similar flag designs, making Minnesota's flag virtually indistinguishable from those flags. And I draw your attention to a handout from the North American Vexillological Association called Good Flag, Bad Flag. The Minnesota flag fails each of the five principles listed in that document. I have red-green color blindness, so design is not my strong suit. The testifiers will talk about the design of the flag in greater detail. The second issue is with the imagery on the seal itself. Seth Eastman designed the seal in 1861 to show a settler plowing a field beside the Mississippi River. A banner shows the state motto, L'Etoile du Nord. And in the background, a Native American on horseback rides towards the setting sun. Now, the background materials you were provided show an excerpt from a poem written by Seth Eastman's wife that describes the intent of their drawing on the seal. And it's not a stretch to call it genocidal towards Native Americans. I'll read an excerpt of this poem. I don't enjoy reading it, but I think it's important just to ground us kind of in the unsettling history behind the seal. So the poem reads, "The red man's course is onward. We claim his noble heritage, and Minnesota's land must pass with all its untold wealth to the white man's grasping hand." The genocidal intent behind the seal is appalling to me, and there's no reason it should be on our flag or our seal. In 1983, the seal was redesigned. The direction of the Native American was changed. He now rides toward the farmer rather than away from him. But in my mind, and in the mind of many I've spoken to, there's no reason to retain the flag or the seal, particularly given its troubling origins. We need a flag we can be proud of, one that is not a cluttered genocidal mess where you can't even tell from a distance if it's flying upside down. A design made by a diverse group of experts. Commissions evaluated and updated the flag in 1892 and 1955, so the idea of updating the flag that underlies this bill is nothing new. In your packets and posted on the committee website are resolutions of support from three of Minnesota's sovereign tribes. It's time for a new flag and seal that reflects the best of Minnesota. I hope you will support this bill, and I'd like to turn it over to Representative Fisher and then to our testifiers.
Thank you. Representative Fisher, welcome to the committee. Please begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Claiborne. Thank you to the committee for the opportunity to help present on this bill here. Originally, the idea for changing the state flag came to me back in 2017 when two high school students from Onamita High School contacted me, Jack Lackman and Thomas Atkins. They've been very much involved in this process. Unfortunately, back then they were high school students. They're now in college, and so they were not able to be here today. And the reason they came up to me with the flag is they were very much interested in flags overall. They did a lot of, when they were growing up, they always did a lot of drawing of the different flags that are out there, et cetera. One of the problems they had is that our flag was extremely complicated. It was hard, as was mentioned, it's hard to distinguish from others. They felt also that it had symbolism on it with the state seal that was very troublesome. And they wanted to be able to have something that was a better representation of what our state is, what our brand is. And this is one of the things that they focused on, is that many flags in some states have become their brand. And if you think of a company, you think of Target with a brand, they've got a big red dot, you know, circle with a dot in the market, and everybody knows what that is. That's what they like to see our flag is, something that's easy for people to remember what it is so that a kid could draw it from memory. And that's where you get more pride and ownership in your flag. And when they were focusing on it, they were recognizing that there's some things that we want to do besides keeping it simple. It's just having a few colors on it. You know, the designs you see here are relative of that. There are also other designs out there that are also very simple along those lines. They want to make sure that it's got meaningful, that is meaningful to our state, and making sure that we try to keep it from getting too cluttered with letters and other things that are hard to see from great distance. And that's one of the things that they had mentioned to me, is that, well, when we're up close like this, we can see the details on the flag, but when you've got the Minnesota flag hanging somewhere, it's not unusual that it gets hung upside down because people can't even tell it what's the right side up or upside down when you're hanging it. And from a distance, you can't even tell what the details are. And those are the kind of things you want to be able to have that kind of ownership. And those were some of the key things that were motivating. This is a bill that we've been working on for quite a while, and I'm glad we're to this point here and be able like to move it over the line to have a state flag that not only can we take pride in, but we'll be able to serve as our brand image going forward that anybody can be able to remember from memory to draw. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Fisher. I understand you have a few testifiers today. Chair Freiberg, is that correct?
Yes, correct.
All right. If I could please ask Chairman Kevin Jensvold from the Upper Sioux community to please come forward. Welcome, Chairman Jensvold, it's great to have you with us today. If you'd please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kevin Jensvold. I serve as the tribal chairman for the Alameda and Dakota people, identified by the United States of America and CFR 25 as the Upper Sioux community. I want to thank you, Madam Chair, for acknowledgement of Dakota lands, that your lawmakers and your laws are created on lands that historically belong, in a sense, and I use the word belong in a very difficult, it doesn't fit into our language nor our culture, but the responsible parties for this land are the Dakota people. For historical perspective, 1805 Pike Treaty was signed by two of seven tribal leaders, and that was good enough for the United States to acquire this land that we're on right now for the price of $2,000. Supposed to be $200,000, but somewhere along the line, one of the accountants must have moved the decimal point, and it ended up being $2,000. Those are things probably that most Minnesotans don't consider or ponder, but as the original caretakers of this land, our Garden of Eden, if you will make a biblical analogy, exists right over here called Bede Dota, the confluence of those rivers just to the east of here is one of our creation stories. I want to acknowledge people here as well, as long as committee members, because again, from a cultural perspective, I would be remiss if I didn't say mitake api to Chia Ron and Tangshia, Cindy and Toja Heather and Toshka Sam behind me. Those are our young indigenous people, and I see them here today, and I'm grateful for them. But I'm here today to talk about, I guess, that state flag. I've served the Yellow Medicine people now for 18 years. In those 18 years, I've made comment to Governor Pawlenty, Governor Dayton, and now Governor Walz about the problem that that flag poses to people who will take the time to dissect and decipher the meaning and draw conclusions as to what that truly represents. In my mother's culture, we have a flag. It's called Wapaha. A Wapaha was integral part of who we were, culturally speaking, because we traveled in small bands of people. Again, environmentally cognizant and aware of our impact on the land, we never ever gathered very often in large places there to protect the resources. But the Wapaha would identify that band and would tell the story of who they were. So when you've seen that Wapaha coming, that staff, if you will, that we would know who our relatives were. And so I don't envy your discussion or this bill, because a flag represents a people, what they stand for, what their morals and values and things like that. We choose to stand behind a flag. We choose to stand up for a flag. We choose to put it in places of prominence to demonstrate who we are. And I look at that seal, and I represent 549 tribal members. 204 of them are less than the age of 18 who in this day and age need to be talked for, need to be protected, need to be stood up for, need to be defended. One of them asked me, why is there a gun pointed at the Indian head? And so I will disagree with Representative Freiberg that 20 of these flags are very similar, because I don't know how many of those flags show a gun pointed at an Indian. But it's hard to tell a young child that that belongs to somebody. Understand that Minnesota is a Dakota word. We are the original caretakers. This state was created on the deceit and the destruction of the Dakota people. 1851 treaty basically helped to allow for the immigrants to occupy tribal lands. Conveniently, in 1858, the 1851 treaty stated we would reserve 10 miles north and south of the Minnesota River from Big Stone to Nuam, approximately 150 miles. Shortly after, the state became acknowledged as the, I believe, 32nd state. I don't know. I'm not much of a historian from that sense. But Dakota leaders were summoned to Washington, D.C. and basically held captive until they then turned over the north side of the river, 10 miles by 150 miles. One of those leaders was a man named Wamdi Tonka, Big Eagle. He is buried about 2 miles from my home in one of our cemeteries. So you look at that part, and to say that the man's plowing up our land, and I appreciate Representative Freiberg making mention of the Seth Eastman poem, but it does depict every moment pushing us further and further away. And I will mention 1862, again, part of who we are. and became known as the Sioux Uprising, then the U.S.-Dakota War, then the Dakota War. But basically it was the United States who failed in their treaty obligations to our people that starved us to the point of we had no other choice but to try to preserve and protect what we had left in that short war. Then gave the United States the opportunity in the state of Minnesota to further push us into that sunset. I believe it was Governor Ramsey at the insistence of the made to the United States that Indian Removal Act of 1863 be enacted. So there are at least four of us here who are in violation of that federal law, which says the Dakota people will forever be removed from these lands. So I'm sitting here on land that was stolen from my mother's people in violation of federal law to say I'm not even allowed here right now, where you all make the greatest impact for all of us as Minnesotans. I said to you earlier, Madam Chair, that I respect the sovereignty and the choices you make, and as much as I expect that sovereignty be honored when you come to tribal lands. So again, this flag is problematic, and I just lay it out there as a simple truth, as we could be seen from eyes that are different from most of the immigrants. But you know, not too many years ago, just a few miles away, there was a man who died and put the spotlight on racism and racial disparities. And I mentioned to Representative Freiberg, as Dakota people, we're invisible in our own land. Not many people know that Minnesota is a Dakota word, you know. But I know there was a state down south, they found their flag offensive and they changed it in a matter of 6 to 8 weeks. So anything's possible, and I appreciate your time today. I know that you're all busy, and I have to get home. I'm heading into an awesome storm, so I ask that you all be safe in all of your travels. And if there's any questions for me, I would gladly honor that request and answer them for you best I can. Otherwise, I'll be on my way.
Thank you, Chairman Jensvold. And you've left us with some really important words about our flag representing and honoring all Minnesotans, and that our flag represents our morals and our values. And I thank you for being the responsible steward of this land, that your people, this is their ancestral and current home. So thank you very much for those words.
I appreciate that. If I could add just one more thing, I guess. My mother always said, don't leave anything unsaid, right? But, you know, Governor Walz talked about one Minnesota here not long ago when he got inaugurated. I was sitting over there down in the fourth or fifth row over there, but I didn't feel like it included my people. He stood in front of a podium that had a great big golden seal that depicted exactly what is very difficult for my people. There are four Dakota bands bordered or bounded by the state of Minnesota now, and I know at least three of them, for reasons similar to what I've just stated, don't fly that flag. You know, whether people notice or not, you know, there's certain things, only certain things we can do, and that's just to bring attention to difficulties that are posed. And the truth, such as it is, it just sits there. It is neither this or that. It simply exists in this day and age. None of us helped to create those things, but we can be here to change those things if we deem it appropriate. So I leave that with all of you. And again, thank you for your time. Wopeda Tonka.
Next, we have Nathaniel Dennis, who is a student from Winona. If you'd please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
My name is Nathaniel Dennis, and I am a senior from Winona Senior High School. Madam Chair, representatives, our state flag is honestly not a symbol that we should be flying. It has no pride. Nobody takes pride in the Minnesota state flag. And that is why I'm here today, is to bring back pride to the Minnesota state flag for one Minnesota, whether it's rural Minnesota, urban Minnesota, white, Native American, Latino. Everybody should feel pride in the state flag. And that is the reason why it needs to change, is because I do not feel pride with the state I have grown up in for my whole 18 years of my life. I've lived in Minnesota, and not once have I looked at the flag and said, oh, I love that flag. That's my home. And I want to feel pride in my state flag. I want to feel pride in it. And I believe everybody in this room wants to feel pride with it too. So as we go about debating how the commission's going to be set up, how we're going to change our state flag, keep that in mind. We want pride in Minnesota, and that comes from changing the state flag and state seal.
Thank you very much. I'm not aware of any other amendments to House File 274. Is there discussion to the bill? Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have one question, and I'm curious why the members of the legislature appointed to the commission aren't able to vote.
Chair Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Nadeau. My understanding is there's, you know, since this they're performing essentially an administrative function, there's kind of a separation of powers issue, and members of the legislature shouldn't be involved in those decisions. Mr. Gehring might be able to speak to that issue as well.
Mr. Gehring.
Madam Chair, Representative Nadeau, so Representative Freiberg, I think, described it correctly. So there's separation of powers principles that stake whenever you create a commission like this, and legislators, because legislators are housed within the legislative branch of government, are constitutionally prohibited from engaging in sort of decision-making, that sort of policy decision-making, and this commission, because it is designed to actually adopt a new flag on its own, that would be a sort of executive administrative function that would cause constitutional issues if legislators had a direct vote in that decision.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I support the commission making the decision. I just thought I would throw my two cents in on, I would encourage the flag to have something about water. We're all made of water. Water runs through us. That's my two cents worth to the commission, is I would hope to add something representing water.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Freiberg. You've been working on this for a while, so I appreciate that. You're a little bit famous for your comments on a podcast recently, so congratulations on that as well. But in the packet here, we have, there's a letter, and part of it, by setting up the commission, you have a number of people from a variety of different backgrounds and some of the ethnic councils. But one of the public had submitted a letter, and we have a whole variety of backgrounds that have helped provide progress in this state. And can you maybe address for that public person that had mentioned, part of the letter says, meanwhile, all Caucasians of Scandinavian heritage are excluded, along with scores of others not represented by the specific government council created. So maybe not fully representative. How much was this kind of an oversight or deliberate to exclude other ethnicities that have contributed much to the state of Minnesota? I think of our northern Minnesota mining heritage, the ethnicities that helped create that part of the state and contributed quite a bit in the Iron Range there, along with other areas. Can you comment on that, please?
Chair Freiberg.
Thank you. I don't think it's accurate to state that any ethnic group or that Caucasian Americans are excluded from membership? You know, the state's made a decision that, you know, as, in terms of the ethnic councils, these are state agencies, and the state has made a decision that it's important to amplify the voices of these communities. So since they are state agencies representing specific groups in Minnesota, I believe it's appropriate to include membership representing those communities here. Certainly the view of Caucasian Minnesotans has been well represented throughout history. But, you know, there are three members, and just so the public's aware, too, I think it's important to highlight who else is members. Three members of the public appointed by the governor. In addition to the ethnic councils, one member representing the Dakota community, one member representing the Ojibwe community. The Secretary of State, or the Secretary of State's designee, the Secretary of State is listed in statute as the keeper of the seal, so I believe it's appropriate to include the Secretary of State, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Historical Society, or the Director's designee, and the Historical Society is in fact in charge of convening them, and there is a representative from the Historical Society here if there are technical questions about that aspect of the bill. But certainly I think the Historical Society would be well equipped to, you know about the state's mining heritage, which I agree is very important. The Chair of the Capital Area Architecture and Planning Board, the Chair of the Minnesota Arts Board, the Executive Director of the Explore Minnesota Tourism, or the Director's designee. And then I do think it's important to have input from legislators as well. So there's two members of the House, two members of the Senate, one of each of the major parties. I don't think anyone's excluded from membership. I think it's, you know, agencies that we as the legislature have entrusted with various responsibilities, and they will, I think they are the appropriate people to include as members of the board.
And Chuck, Representative Kosnick, I'd also like to refer you to line 3.25 in the DE2, where it says, must also solicit public feedback and suggestions.
Thank you for that addition, Madam Chair.
Was there a follow-up?
Well, I appreciate the response from the author. I would also add that as a 8-year member of one of the ethnic councils on their board as a legislative, that was my honor to serve on that council. I do agree it's appropriate to have the councils on a commission like this if that's what we do, but I don't think it was fully answered or very satisfactorily answered why a lot of other ethnicities that may not have an ethnic council specifically as a kind of an agency of the state is excluded. When it's very much obvious that the ethnicities are an important part of what you're trying to do with a council like this, and there are a lot of ethnicities that are excluded, and we'll just leave it at that, but it's quite obvious, I'd say. And so I appreciate the comment from the public that shared that.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. Representative Harder.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Freiberg, my question that I have, I need some clarification or some help with this. So it relates to the makeup of the committee. And there's a number of individuals or councils that are listed. Is there a reason why there is only two recommended by the Indian Affairs Council? Shouldn't that be perhaps more?
Chair Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Harder. I'm certainly willing to work with you on that. Initially, there was an earlier version of the bill had only one, in fact, and that was a direct suggestion from representatives of our tribal communities. They suggested including one member of the Dakota community and one member of the Ojibwe community. I think that is a very important group, just given that they are currently depicted on the seal and on the flag. I think that is a very important group to include. So that there are two, which is more than other groups, but I'm certainly willing to work with you if you think the number should be higher.
Representative Harder, follow up.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Perhaps maybe you should look at that. So I'm looking at, you know, the governor gets to appoint three. Maybe he should have less and allow the Indian Affairs Council to appoint more. That's just my suggestion.
Thank you, Representative Harder. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 274 be re-referred to Ways and Means. All those in favor of the motion, please say, oh, Oh, as amended. Thank you very much for that catch. Thank you. So House File 274 be recommended to be re-referred to Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none, the motion prevails, and House File 274, as amended, is re-referred to Ways and Means.
Thank you.
Representative Keeler, welcome to the committee. And since I know you had obligations earlier that prevented you from being here earlier, I wanted you to know that I, as the committee chair, acknowledged that land acknowledgments also go with action. And so with that, I'm very excited to hear your bill this morning. And welcome to the committees. If you are not a member of this committee, I will recommend, make a motion that House File 211 be recommended to be placed on the general register. And with that, if you would please speak to your bill.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. Also, I guess in this space, Representative Harder, it's good to know that you'll be joining us on MIAC. So the questions that you ask are really great. I also serve on there. So when we come to these conversations, it'll be really good. ERDL was amazing in that space. And still standing with our tribal nations, I'm really looking forward to do that work with you.
Would you like to do the A-17 first?
Yeah, I can. Okay.
We have an amendment labeled the A-17, and I will move that amendment. If you'll speak to the A-17, then we'll get your bill in the order you'd like.
Sure, sounds good. So what the amendment does, Chair, is this is also in the governor's package, and the amendment came over because what this does is it just says anywhere within statute. We're just updating Indigenous Peoples Day. That wasn't in the original bill. That is the amendment.
All right. Thank you very much. Is there any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the A-17, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Here, with one audible objection, the motion prevails and the A-17 is adopted. Please speak to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 211 is really establishing Indigenous Peoples Day as the second Monday in October. This comes out of my work as a Native American liaison. But first, I want to ask all of you guys, and I hope the answer is something that you know, but do you know what treaty or sovereign nation you all serve on? I serve on the 1851 treaty. Minnesota is 100% ceded treaty territory or sovereign nations. We have 11 sovereign nations in this state. So if you ask why this is important and why this conversation is important, that's an example. Those are things that we should all know. Those should be things that we don't have blank looks on our faces when somebody asks you that. It's just as important of knowing as what city government you represent, what county you represent. It's paramount that we know also what land you stand on. So what this does is it just recognizes Indigenous Peoples Day. When I was working in the school district, we did a whole lot of conversations when I was in my master's program about what are the barriers to academic success outside of academic rigor. We weren't asking students, is math hard, is science hard? The number one thing that came up over and over, Madam Chair, is that they didn't see representation in the school districts. And so what we did is we asked our school district if we could honor Indigenous Peoples Day, and we were told only if we recognized it as a city holiday or it was recognized as a state holiday. So with that, I moved to the Human Rights Commission in my community, and we passed it as Indigenous Peoples Day, and it's one of the most beautiful things I've seen for the entire community. What we do is we bring the entire community together and celebrate what is really beautiful. Often we sit at these tables, and I'm sure you all know this, is that as Indigenous people, we're always the worst. There's always all these disparities. I mean, you name it, we sit at these tables and hear this a lot. This is a way to really celebrate the most beautiful parts of who we are and share that in a loving way with our community. And so that's what we're here to do today. We did pass through education policy because there's an education component to it. Here we're just looking to establish it as a state-recognized holiday. And I do have testifiers that I'd like to yield the rest of my time to.
Thank you very much. Would you like, so we have Secretary Sam Strong from the Lake Nation area. If you'd like to come forward, Secretary Strong. Welcome to the committee. It's an honor to have you with us. If you'd state your name for the record, please, and begin your testimony.
Bonjour, bimosay gnu indigenous makwendu dem miskwagamwizagan indonjaba. My name is Sam Strong. I'm secretary of the Red Lake Nation. It's an honor to be before you here today, and just wanted to share some history here. I know we were talking about the state seal earlier and some of the history of the state and some of the negative things that happened to our people in the history of the state. And so, you know, you think about how this state was created. You know, the first territorial governor, Alexander Ramsey, you know, the first governor, Henry Sibley. You know, these guys, they came into Indian communities and they negotiated these treaties with our nations, right? And so our treaty, the Red Lake Treaty of 1863, was in fact negotiated by Alexander Ramsey. And so the intent of these treaties was to steal our land. The intent of these treaties was to exterminate Native people, and that comes directly from their words, and I'm glad that was shared earlier. It's funny, I find that me and Kevin Jensvold end up in the same space and we talk about the same things, and it's not planned, but it's more so our attempt to write history, our attempt to speak to some of the atrocities that happened right here on the land that you guys sit on, within these buildings that were created from wealth that was stolen from Native people. And so you talk about who these people were, and they're known as the creators of the state of Minnesota, right? And what they don't talk about is what happened to the Native people under their rule, if you will. And what we don't talk about is some of the fraud and deception that these individuals carried on throughout their lives. You know, these individuals had relationships with the railroad companies. They had relationships with, you know, the Hudson Bay Company. They, in fact, benefited financially directly from negotiating these treaties. Not only did they benefit from it, but it was a very well-known fact that these individuals were carrying on under the guise of the government, in fact, for their own business opportunities and for their own wealth. And so we celebrate that, right? We celebrate these people as the, you know, archetypes of our community, and yet we don't talk about the history of the people that suffered as a result of it. We don't talk about the atrocities that happened. You know, you talk about the Dakota Wars, and the thing that comes to mind is Wounded Knee, the massacre at Wounded Knee. You know, this is where our federal government, our army, rounded up women and children and killed, some say, up to 300 people, unarmed. Unarmed, celebrating their culture, their way of life. And they murdered these people, and they dumped them into a mass grave. And if you ever go out to South Dakota, go to that site. And remember that history. That's the history of the United States. That's the history of our people. And, you know, these same atrocities occurred for hundreds of years. You know, we're talking about the largest genocide possibly in human history. You know, the extermination of an entire continent at the hands of America, at the hands of, you know, the founding fathers of this nation. And we forget that. You know, we don't talk about this. We celebrate instead Columbus, you know, a known murderer and rapist and a known person that really had ill intent for the people of America. And it's important that we right these wrongs. It's important that we start to put together a history that's truthful and that's honest about what happened, because if we don't speak the truth, it will repeat itself. If we don't speak the truth about the pain that our people still suffer as a result of these atrocities, then it will be replicated. You know, and I find it very hard to come to the Capitol sometimes, and I see all this wealth here, right? And, you know, you pull up to, you know, the Capitol, and you see all this opulence and all this wealth that has been created from our lands. And then you think about our treaties. You know, Article 6 of the
United States Constitution states that states are responsible for the treaties that were signed by the federal government. Those treaty obligations include food, shelter, job training, education, health care. And you look at all this wealth that was created and then go down to Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis and you'll see our people on the streets. You'll see our people suffering. And the reality is we don't talk about the lack of the state's obligations to these people. You know, we honored our side of the treaty. The wealth that created the state was because of these treaties. And so why is it okay for the state to not honor its obligations? Why is it okay for us to ignore these people that have suffered so much at the hands of this state? You know, and it's time that we start to right those wrongs. It's time that we start bringing truth and reality to everyday lives. You know, we need to teach our children that you can make mistakes, but you can also make it right. We need to teach our children that these obligations that the federal and state government made need to be honored. If we want to teach our children to be righteous in this world, we need to teach them the truth. And that includes the truth of the state. And some of it's bad, but some of it's also really good. You know, we need to celebrate Native people's identity, our culture, our strength. We need to celebrate who we are and teach those around us how to honor us, to understand our history, and most importantly, how we can move forward past these traumas and how we can start to heal these communities that have been harmed so much. And I hope that as we move forward, each of you thinks of that. They think of those people that are on the streets. They think of those community members that have been harmed so much from historical trauma and from the trauma that has been perpetuated by this same government. And I hope that we can start to come to a place where we honor the past, but we also honor our future. So, Miigwech.
Thank you very much, Secretary Strong. I really appreciate your testimony and just reminding us of the sacredness of the land and the sacredness of the history, right? And the honesty and integrity that brings us all forward. I appreciate that very much. Thank you so much for your testimony. And with that, I will ask, please, if you'll stay near so that we can have questions later. Next, we have Cindy Milda from the Shakopee Mattawatin Sioux community. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and please begin your testimony.
Thank you. Hearing my Tahanshi, Kevin, and Sam, I got emotional. Please excuse me as I work through this because it is very emotional.
I will say to you, no apology necessary. The honesty of your emotion is what we're here today to talk about. And so I thank you very much for that demonstration. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, ha mataki api, shante washte iya, iyo ha na pe chius api ye. Madakota ye shakpe mede wakantuan oyate himataha Amos and Rose Crooks Tioshbae Himataha Dakota Ia Pijitiha Maniwi De Mie Washitu Ia Cindy Milda Imakiapie. In Dakota I said, hello my relatives. I greet you with a good heart and a warm handshake. I am Dakota and my homelands are the Shakopee Mattawatin Sioux community. And I come from the Amos and Rose Crooks family. My Dakota name is Waxwith Medicine Woman, and my English name is Cindy Milda. And I am the Public Education Program Coordinator at Shakopee Mattawatin Sioux Community, or SMSC. There's my introduction, sorry.
It's beautiful. Please continue.
Thank you. I'm here to testify in favor of House File 211. My role with SMSC is to share our community stories with groups from school and church groups to senior citizens and youth clubs. During these tours, I often tell my personal story as a Dakota Wia woman. When I turned 18 years old, just 38 years ago, I was denied the right to vote in my home city, county, and state. SMSC members were subject to land status in a city that considered us illegal aliens. It took Minnesota Supreme Court action in 1985 to restore our right to vote. Another story I would like to share with you today is when my children were in school, I would keep them out of school for Columbus Day, as we considered it Indigenous Peoples Day. We celebrated it as Indigenous People Day. It was a special day to celebrate our culture and who we are as Indigenous people. It wasn't to have them skip school. It was to educate them more on who they are as Dakota children. My grandmother was denied this right as she was a boarding school survivor from the Pipestone Indian School in Minnesota. She didn't want her children and grandchildren to go through the same treatment she received when she went to school. Her hands were slapped for speaking her first language, Dakota. She had classmates pass away in the boarding school while she was there. My grandmother did not teach us the language or most of our culture out of fear of institutional racism. At 56 years old, I am now learning my Dakota language along with my husband, children, and grandchildren. Many people do not know these stories. Many people do not know the historic and ongoing resiliency of Indigenous people. When I share these stories with school groups and teachers in particular, it opens the conversation to the lack of resources our educators have. There are educators out there who desire to know more about Indigenous history, not only our past, but our future and our story of resiliency. House File 211 will not suddenly create these resources for educators, but it opens a pathway for the conversation in a state-sanctioned way, and I hope you will support it. Please support this bill for our future generations so they do not have to go through the same fight that we have to go through today. Pidamayaye, thank you for your time, and I am happy to answer any questions at this time.
Thank you very much. If you don't mind, I think we'll go through the testimony, yeah. And then if you'll again stay close, yep. So that we can ask you to address questions later. The next testifier we have is Adash Uni. Thank you. If you please state your name for the record and begin your testimony, and welcome.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Adosh Uni, and I'm the Director of Government Relations with the Minnesota Department of Education. And thank you for the opportunity to allow me to testify in support of this bill. And MDE and the administration is happy to voice our strong support for this bill and thank Representative Keeler for leading on this issue. On October 14, 2019, Governor Walz proclaimed the day Indigenous Peoples Day in Minnesota and has done so in all subsequent years. Our state is honored to have the highest serving Native American woman in state office with Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan, a member of the White Earth Nation. Recognizing Indigenous Peoples Day has been a stance that the governor, lieutenant governor, and the commissioner are proud to uphold. It is far past due that we, as a state, elevate, validate, and honor the voices of Native people who were the first residents of the land upon which we now sit. Our schools are not only a place of learning, but also understanding how that subject applies to the world around them, the people around them, and their surroundings. Our tribal nations are distinct government bodies, not just our neighbors and community members, whose role in and contributions to our country is deserving of a day of recognition. Native Americans have a long history on these lands, have strong cultural beliefs, and they are an integral part of our country's history, present, and future. For a people with so much to contribute to our students' learning experience and understanding of the world around them, it is critical to hold this space for them. MDE's Office of American Indian Education and the Indigenous Education Specialists continue to stand ready to provide schools with information and resources to be able to help speak about Native history and culture accurately and holistically. Again, the commissioner and MDE are happy to support this bill and thank Representative Keeler for her work to elevate the importance of Indigenous Peoples Day. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Andy. I appreciate your being here today. I'm not aware of any other amendments to your bill, so if we can just move to member discussion. Representative Harder.
Thank you, Chair Cleavorn and Representative Keeler. I am looking forward to serving with you on the Indian Council. I'm very excited about that. A little tidbit about Bobby Harder is that I lived many years in South Dakota, and a couple of those years I lived on the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. So I am well aware of the good, not so good of things that happen on the reservation. I have been to Wounded Knee several times, whoever mentioned that. I have been there. And one of the things that I learned when I lived on the reservation is the culture and, of course, the language. So many tribes, as generations come, you know, they're losing the language. And so in class, we used to have elders come and teach us the Lakota language. It's been many years. I can't speak it now, but I was able to speak it at one point in my life. So my question I have, I'm getting to that. So growing up, I am aware and have always used the word Native American. I mean, that's just the word that I use. And so when in South Dakota, wherever they changed it from Columbus Day to Native American, that's just the term that I'm familiar with and that I use frequently. So can you please help clarify for me this change of Native American to Indigenous? Can you just give me more clarification about what that means, please?
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Harder.
Chair Cleavorn.
Thank you, Representative
That's exciting. I grew up in South Dakota, so that's a fun connection. And I remember growing up when we created Native American Heritage Day in South Dakota. And it was like growing up in a world that you just thought this is what we did, and then came to Minnesota and realized that that was very different. So for us, it's been a transition, right? It's always about generational. My mom very much says Indian, and we look at the history of how that name came about, that it's just a new understanding of Indigenous culture as the original people that stand on the land, the original stewards of the land. And that's what we're trying to do here. Native American, also there's a space that we were here before it was classified as America. And so we are the Indigenous people, the original people of the land.
Thank you very much. Representative Harder, was there a follow-up?
Yeah, just a comment. Thank you, Chair. The comment that I have is that words have meaning, and when they change, I just want to make sure that our Native American people, that we're not losing their culture. So I just want to make that clear, that whichever word that is appropriate for the tribes, I just want to make sure that we're not losing that culture. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the author for bringing this forward. I want to point out what a gift it was today to hear from our tribal leaders, the emotional labor that they have agreed to come and share with us. I want us all to be cognizant of how incredible that is and the weight that it carries. The thing that I like about this bill is that we will spend at least an hour talking to our kiddos in the classroom about this history. It's pretty telling, those of us that had no idea about the author's question earlier. I wrote down 1851 treaty. That right there proved the necessity of this. And I shared in the education policy committee how embarrassed I was to not have the knowledge I should have. And so I just want us to really approach this with the seriousness that it deserves, the respect it deserves. And just thank you. Thank you to the leaders who are here today who have come before to teach us. Thank you, and thank you to the author.
Thank you, Representative Berg. Representative Bonner.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Keeler, for bringing this bill forward. I think it's a long time coming, and I am glad that we are here today. I'm also want to say thank you to Chairman Jenswald and to Secretary Strong for being here today, as well as Cindy. You know, this is, it, as Representative Berg mentioned, a great honor to have them here today with us. I mean, to honor us with their presence, to take time out of their schedules to come here to the Capitol is a big deal. And so thank you for doing that. I'm so grateful. I also wanted to say thank you to Chairwoman Jensbold for, you know, sort of being the truth teller. He has always, I have had great respect for him for that reason, as well as Secretary Strong today. Those words were not easy to speak in front of this body, and I am very grateful for them. You know, Chairman Jensbold said, we tell a story of who we are that represents our morals and our values. And Secretary Strong followed that with, we can make mistakes, but we can also make it right. Right? And that is a little bit of what we're doing here today. It is my hope. The one thing I will say about this bill is it mentions in the text that we would be 1 hour of instruction. I will be candid that I think that the history of our indigenous peoples is rich and strong and probably deserves far more than an hour. And it is my hope that most folks going forward will choose to do far more than an hour, because I don't think that is sufficient. But with that, I just want to say that I want to honor all of the stories that have come here today that teach us how to be stronger, better, and hopefully going forward more united. And so thank you for this bill. Thank you for this. And I am secretly quite rejoicing inside that we have come to this place today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Keeler. I appreciate you bringing this bill. And, you know, our history in Minnesota and America is sordid, and it is traumatic. And it's and if this is the, you know, this is the start to start celebrating that and moving it forward, I think it's a great thing. Most people don't know I have an adopted sister from Red Lake. And it's, you know, it's growing up with you know, with that, she was actually, you know, in my aunt, she was with my aunt for a number of years with her brother, and he aged out, and she was 2 years younger, and then she came and lived with us. And the trauma that she deals with even today is significant. So I'm happy to support this, and like Representative Bonner, I think teaching, you know, all about the history of this state, be it indigenous, be it whatever, I think it should be far more than 1 hour, and I'm happy to support the bill today. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Keeler, we've talked about this bill for a couple of years that you've been working on it, so... I appreciate the continuing to work on it. I still have the same concerns. I guess, and I should step back, and I appreciate that the chairman was here. I think I don't see him anymore, but I appreciate him and Secretary Strong for being here. I did learn a lot when we had a legislative state government tribal relations
training.
There we go. Conference kind of, but that was very informative, and I think I encourage any other legislators that haven't had the opportunity and our freshmen to do that because it is important. And I think having an Indigenous Peoples Day would be appropriate. Where I have some concerns, and I think we may be. Where I think a lot of other people, a lot of the public and people that I've heard from also have a problem is when we're canceling out the heritage and history in celebration of one ethnicity and replacing it with something else is where, no surprise to you, we've diverged. You know, a lot of people celebrate Columbus Day, maybe not specifically for Columbus himself, but for the great achievement that he did in terms of discovering the Americas and a new route that was there. Certainly many people in our history are flawed, he being no exception, but you know, many Italians observe Columbus Day as a celebration of their heritage and not Columbus himself. And without going into a deeper history of that, I think, you know, a simple Google search can recognize that there are legitimate accomplishments and a heritage there that is being canceled out. And literally in the bill, striking out Columbus and replacing it with something else. I think there's room in this state and in humanity to have diverging opinions without canceling people out. And so I appreciate the work on the Indigenous Peoples Day, but canceling it out at the expense of other people's proud history, as flawed as it may be at times, is where I think we're overstepping here a little bit. But so I will not be supporting this. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, if I can take a chair's privilege for just a moment. As a descendant of Italian immigrants, I would like to thank the Dakota people for the abundance of your land that allowed my starving people to come to this country and to have a quality of life. And I'll end my comments with where I began. The Minnesota legislature is located on the traditional, ancestral, and contemporary lands of the Dakota people. You are not our guests today. We are in your homeland. So I will thank you for allowing us the honor and privilege of sharing this space with you today. And do you have any closing comments?
Sure, of course. Thank you. And I will say on Google, you can actually Google what discovery means. And it means that you're finding something new, and Columbus did not find something new. We've been here. We were here. It was actually the start of genocide. And for us, that's something that we don't want to continue to celebrate and acknowledge. And so it is a good day. And I want us to continue to move forward in this space that as an Indigenous woman through and through, the reason I came here is because I didn't see myself represented in this state, in this space, in this building, on this land. And it changes you. And our next generations deserve to be seen, valued, loved, and honored. And I think that doing things like this, even though it does feel really small, even though it is just 1 hour, there's other bills that we have that are trying to do more. But in this space, it is really designed for us to see the beauty in who we are. I believe we're some of the most beautiful people and the most beautiful stories. Often we hear about our pain. And really, like, we've turned our pain into purpose to make sure our next generations, you know, stay connected to their communities and stay connected to who they are, so we don't have the hardships over and over. So I appreciate the support. I appreciate the conversation. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I also appreciate my leaders and my friends joining me in this journey. I say this often, sitting here as a legislator, as an Indigenous person, we were supposed to be exterminated. That was what was supposed to happen. We are the seeds of our previous generations, and hope that we plant seeds for the future. And I appreciate all of you being a part of that today.
And Representative Keeler, you are one strong tree. I will just say that. seeing no further discussion, I renew my motion that House File 211 as amended be placed on the general register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Hearing none, the motion prevails, and you are on your way to the general register. Our next meeting is, I don't know about this. Stay tuned for our next meeting. Please, I would encourage everyone to stay safe over the snow emergency that's coming our way. And I would like, before I adjourn, I would like to recognize Jonah Westerman, who will be our new committee legislative assistant. And I would like to thank Mr. O'Neill for his awesome work filling in between. So thank you. And with that, we are adjourned.